greet you this morning in the name of King Jesus. He's everything. He's everything to us. He's everything about what will come behind. He's everything about everything. He's our flag. The word is our flag. I'm not sure if I have that all right, but this morning I have a very, 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 very simple sermon. Perhaps any of you who are Christians and who believe the Bible could easily preach it. And yet, in our world, functioning in human ways, we sometimes are not as clear on this doctrine as we could be or should be. And last Sunday, I was assigned this title, How Should the Christian Respond to Politics? Now, I've changed this message this morning. Because you have two nice big boards, I appreciate that a lot. You know, it will help me this morning a little in my teaching. But I believe that one is dry. Probably the last time I used it, or Sherwin, forgot to put the lid on. So that's my title this morning. Now I find it interesting, a few weeks ago I was with my brother. He was for lack of better terminology, he didn't believe the Bible teaches a millennium. He did not believe that the Bible teaches that Christ is going to come and rule on earth for 1,000 years. He did not believe that, and he was attacking me about what he called as dispensationalism. And I find that interesting because nothing could teach dispensations more than having a Sunday school lesson on God's command for people to kill other people and the teaching that I have this morning. So I told the man, I said, well, your very doctrine most certainly stands on dispensations or how God works among men. And he said, I don't know what he said, it's not the point. The point is this morning that we live in a day of grace. And the dispensation or the time when God will come and mete out judgment against sinners is another dispensation. This morning we live in a dispensation of grace. And so I was asked to teach on this subject, and I want to do that this morning. I intend to be very simple in my teaching, and if I can, and somehow try to help our young folks who sometimes find this confusing to have some teaching that can help them in their lives, because it's so important. Somebody said in the Sunday school class, I don't know which who MacDair said it, but it's so true. When they come after you, when the government, which people are holding so high, when they come after you, how will it be when you are a hunted partridge? And when they come after you because you belong to the Lord Jesus Christ, how will it be then, and how would you look at things then if they were hunting you this morning, if they were coming after you this morning, if Caesar was coming after you this morning to take your life in your neck? And Jesus teaches of a time when it will be so. It will not always be as it is today, and we need to think about that. So when this man over here. And we use that term because Caesar was the ruler of the Roman Empire, and our United States culture and thought patterns and rulers goes around that. This would be true. The teaching I give this morning would be true if I lived in Ireland, or if I lived in Australia, or if I lived in Greenland, or wherever I lived. The teaching would still be true. I just used that one because that was the name of the ruler of the Roman Empire. This teaching I want to make this morning is the defining difference between the teachings of your forefathers. And we use the word Protestant, and I don't think that's a fair term. Maybe Reformed doctrines or other ways to say that. I'm not sure how to say that. I don't know if it's a fair word to say Protestantism. That's kind of whatever. But this is the teaching. And so how should we relate? And I want to read some words from Jesus. In fact, they're the last words of Jesus. And someone has said that you should listen to last words of people. In John 17, Jesus prayed quite a bit, and I'll just read there. I have given them, that's you and I, thy word, and the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. And so we have these two kingdoms here behind me on the boards, the kingdoms of the world and Jesus, and that's exactly what Jesus was referring to. I pray not that thou should take them out of the world, so we live in Caesar's world, but that thou shouldst keep them from the evil that is in this world. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. And that's a tremendous verse, because just soon afterwards, we would go on and read the crucifixion story. What we would see is the highest manifestation of these two kingdoms that can be portrayed. Jesus on a cross, put there by Caesar. It can't get any higher than that. That separation right there. So how should we relate to that? We do live in the world. Jesus said they're going to live in the world. And then he said something very important in verse 17, sanctify them through thy word. Thy word is truth. And I have written in my Bible here, verse 17, God wants to, through our reading of the word, to sanctify our human perspective. In other words, to read the word is how we get the answer to these complicated questions. Now, I'm just going to begin here before I go any further. And then soon after that, of course, we have this scene. I have this morning to start out, how should we, if we're going to try to answer a question, how should we function, or how should we view or relate to politics? I used AI. That's what I did. I asked AI to generate me a list of all the aspects of political and civil life, and the list is so long that it's going to bore you, and that's important. That's the reason I'm giving it to you, so you can see what we are, in fact, dealing with, and how should we answer the question, how should a Christian respond to politics? Participation in government. This is a list that AI gave me, and AI is not something more evil than anything else. It's just another layer of being able to take the internet and to put it all together in a quick hurry. That's really as simple as that's what it is. And it comes with, so that's what it is. And I asked it to give me this list, and it gave me this list. Participation in government. Voting in local, state, and federal elections. Voter registration. Political parties and campaigns. Campaign donations and endorsements. Political rallies and demonstrations. Lobbying and advocacy. Writing to elected officials. Town halls and civic forums. Public office and government roles. Holding elected office, appointed government positions, local, state, and federal offices, civil service employment, public administration, regulatory agencies, law, courts, and justice, judicial appointments, serving as a judge, jury duty, court testimony, civil and criminal law, Supreme Court decisions, law enforcement and public safety, police and sheriff departments, federal law enforcement agencies, prison and correction systems, use of force policies, community policing, policing, military and national defense, military enlistment, National Guard service, draft registration, war and defense policy, veterans affairs, weapons and use of force, firearm ownership, gun control legislation, self-defense laws, use of lethal and non-lethal force, weapons and manufacturing and sales, capital punishment and criminal penalties, death penalty, life imprisonment, sentencing laws, prison reform, rehabilitation versus punishment, civil rights and liberties, freedom of religion, freedom of speech and press, freedom of assembly, equal protection under law, parental and religious rights, church and state relations, separation of church and state, free exercise and establishment causes, religious exemptions, faith-based initiatives, clergy and political speech, education policy, public and private school funding, homeschool regulations, curriculum standards, school choices and vouchers, economic and labor policy, taxation, federal budget and debt, labor laws and unions, business regulation, agriculture and trade policies, welfare and social services, Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid, public assistance programs, child welfare and foster care, health care policies, health insurance regulations, medical mandates, end-of-life care laws, abortion legislation, immigration and citizenship, immigration law, border security, refugee and asylum policy, citizenship policies, family and moral legislation, marriage and divorce law, adoption regulation, assisted suicide, human trafficking laws, environmental policies, environmental protection laws, energy regulation, land and water use, conservation programs, media, information and technology, freedom of the press, media regulation, online speech and censorship, data privacy, foreign policy, diplomatic relations, treaties and alliances, international aid, sanctions and trade agreements, local government and community life, zoning laws, property rights, infrastructure funding, local ordinances, civic, ethnic, and culture, patriotism and nationalism, civil disobedience, political polarization, loyalty to the state versus loyalty to Christ. And so I'll just stop there, but that's the list that it gave me about where and how does our life meet this question of Jesus' nation and Caesar's nation. Here we live this morning. So next I want to use a number of foundational texts, and we're going to just begin and read these, and I'm going to ask these young men here on the front benches to stand up and turn around and read this to the congregation loud and clear, because one day God may want you to be a preacher, and you might as well learn now how to do that. So we're going to start over here with Tristan. I want you to get Matthew 22, 15 to 22. And I want you to stand up and read this to the congregation, Matthew 22, 15 to 22, and see what Jesus says about these two kingdoms, because we believe in what we call separation of church and state, and we believe in two different kingdoms. We live with Caesar. We live here humanly, but we believe that our allegiance and our all that we are is to Jesus Christ. Like an ambassador who lives in another country, he doesn't belong to that country at all, but he lives there respectfully. He abides by the laws. He lives there. He respects it. He knows it. He lives under its authority as long as he can, as much as he can. But he's there representing. The Bible calls us ambassadors, and we believe, and this defines us very differently from some other Christian doctrine, and this is the Father, our forefathers taught us, that we live in two different separate things. And there's things that we cannot and would not do. And so we'll try to work through that just a little bit, and then I want to talk about some of the fringe things that we meet and the questions that we meet as Christians today. Because as we read in our list, it's just almost part of every part of who we are. We're always meeting this. So, Tristan, would you please stand up and read to the congregation Matthew 22:15-22 loud so we can hear that all.
Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why tempt ye me, ye hypocrites? Show me the tribute money, and thou brought unto him a penny. And he saith unto them, Who is this image and the superscription? And they said unto him, Caesar's. Then saith he unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's." When they had heard these words, they marveled and left him.
And so here we have scriptures which teach us that Jesus understood that there were two things going on here. And we have these Herodians, we have this different political group, religious and political probably, and we have this going on. And he just said, there's two kingdoms, mine and Caesar's. Okay, someone read with me, and let's see, it's your turn next. Read, just stand up loudly and read John 18:36. And read 37 also. 36 and 37, John 18:36-37. Thank you. So again, Jesus says he recognizes that he lives in a world, but that there is another kingdom. And he says that if my kingdom were of this world, then I would fight, but it's not. And so he says, I do not fight. And of course, this moves into other areas where we believe, which touches fighting, and we'll talk about that in a little wee bit. But Jesus again clarifies two kingdoms, Caesar's kingdom and his own kingdom. Okay, next. Romans 13:1-7. Next young lad there in line. Cameron, I believe. Are you Cameron? Yes, please, Cameron. Read Romans 13, and you'll notice that Paul here recognizes that he lived in the Roman Empire, and he recognized their authority. He did not diminish their authority, but he recognized their authority. Read Romans 13:1-7, please.
Minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually unto this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to those whom tribute is due, custom. unto whom cost, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor.
Thank you. So Paul recognizes the same thing, that we live in the world. He recognizes Caesar's authority. He says, pay him what belongs to him. In fact, he said he's a minister. He's a minister. A state police officer stops you for speeding or whatever he does, comes to your house, an officer, or maybe it's just a code man at the in your building project or whatever it is. He is ordained of God. He is a minister of God. So next time the inspector comes out, Brother Linden, you should ask him if he knows that he is a minister of God. He probably didn't know that he's a minister of God, but he is a minister of God. He is given direction, and anywhere that it does not violate a Jesus' kingdom, we submit to that. Sometimes we don't know all the answers why. Sometimes we think it is corruption. Some of that is true, probably. But Paul says they are ministers of God, and to resist it, you bring damnation to yourself. I know, whatever you're in, you face this in different ways. But in all that list, you face this in different ways. But we pay our taxes. We don't grumble about it. We pay that. We use their roads. Yeah, he says the same thing that Jesus says. This is why we believe what we believe. These are foundational verses, and there will be some other verses, but just giving some foundational verses here to keep it simple, to make the point that we believe that we live in Caesar's world, or Trump's, or whatever world you are, Macron's, or whoever it is. We live in that world where we were being Christians, but Jesus is the head of our kingdom, and we're like ambassadors. And these verses are very, very clear that God has set them up. Whomsoever will, Daniel says, it sets up whomsoever will and puts down whomsoever will. That's their business. It's their work. Capital punishment, whatever it is, that's good and right. That's their work, but not our work. Okay, let's go next to Acts chapter 5, and we'll just, Victor's busy there with his little one, we'll just jump back to Brother Neil. Acts chapter 5, verse story. These men were told by this group, this men, ministers of God from this group said, you need to stop preaching. You've got to stop teaching this stuff. And then we have verse Acts 5:29. Brother Neil, if you stand up and read that verse. And Peter's response here gives us another aspect of what we believe about these two kingdoms, and that is that Peter believed that this one stands highest so long as this one does not violate this one. Read Acts 5:29. What did Peter tell them?
Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than man.
Thank you. Very simple, but it's a very simple truth that we believe that this kingdom is the foundational one. It functions under this one. And so anywhere that the Bible would, where this would, if they would tell you to get a gun and shoot, you could not do that. We'll get to that in a little while. Okay, let's go to Philippians chapter 3 and read a verse there. We know we're in this world in which citizenship and all this is so big of a deal. And it is a big deal. Citizenship in this Caesar's kingdom is a big deal. I remember being down in Deming, New Mexico, a couple years ago, 10 years ago probably now, and I watched. Brother Glenn said, let me take you down here and look at this. So it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. and we went down there. And we're talking about citizenship. This next verse is about citizenship. We have citizenship, earthly citizenship here, and heavenly spiritual citizenship here, but it's just about citizenship. And I remember going down there in on the American side of the border, there was a little office there, and there sat a ambulance. And these little girls, somehow, when they're going to have their babies, they just know when that's going to be, of course, and somehow or another, they would end up on the American side of the border when a baby was going to be born. And we live in a good country, and so the duty was to take the little girl to the hospital to bear her baby. And of course, by the rules of Caesar, she automatically became, this child automatically became an American citizen. That's what the fight's about. That's what the fight's about, see? And then Glenn said, well, now just stay here a little while, and about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, these buses would start coming down from the Deming School. I think he told me some 400 students that were born like these babies and had automatic citizenship, and so automatically they received U.S. school teaching. So they would come across in the morning, some 400 students, Mexicans, get on American buses, go to school. 4 o'clock, they bring them back, they go across the border. Now, that just doesn't seem, and you paid for it. You paid for it. See how easy it is to get involved? See how easy it, but that is their business. That is their business. That is not our business. We don't get involved with that. But something like that, I think, maybe can just kind of irk you a little bit. It just kind of stir up your mind about this a little wee bit. But see, Jesus said, that's their business. You ain't going to a town hall meeting about it if you belong to this one. If you belong to this king, you ain't going to a town hall meeting. You're not going to get an involvement with your neighbor about the wall or the, that is their business. We didn't read the verse yet. Let's see. Curtis, Philippians 3:20 talks about something here. It tells us where is our citizenship. Okay, well, it says conversation. So there we have this little glitch about translation. But it means our citizenship. And I thought it used the word citizenship there. But that's what it means, because that's what that our conversation, that word there is our citizenship, is in this kingdom right here. And we live and function in this one. Okay, citizenship establishment there. The point that I'm making in the teaching is that we belong to the citizenship of heaven. Jesus said, you're going to live in Caesar's, but your real citizenship, so you're an ambassador. We are ambassadors. We are living here, but we don't belong here. We belong over there. 1 Peter 2:11 to 17. Let's see, Roger, will you take that one, please? 1 Peter 2:11 to 17. Okay, so thank you for that. So again, Peter says, we know that this is what Peter believed, and not all Christians believe this in quite this way. There is a group of Christians that believe that, yes, among social orders and among society, we should love each other and so forth and so on, but when it comes to nationalism or the call of Caesar to fight, then they put that in another category, and I believe that's called the just war theory or other ways of looking at that. And so some Christians do not believe this the same as I'm teaching this morning. That's my point. We just take the Bible and believe, like Paul says here, or like Peter says here, and then Paul writes to the Thessalonians, he said we're supposed to pray and honor the king, and so we do everywhere that we can. Now, keep in mind that the same man who wrote these words said back there, we obey God rather than men. Why was that? Because this is his highest calling, and anywhere that this stands above this, then he must obey this. But anywhere that this does not violate this, then he says we honor that king, and we love the brotherhood, and we fear God, and we submit to it, whether it be governors, even evil men. And we know that in politics in today's world, whether you like the donkey or the elephant, the truth of the matter is they're all corrupt. They're all corrupt. It is true that the basic agenda of elephants, sometimes at least it seems that way, adheres more to the principles of Jesus' kingdom, but donkeys and elephants are all corrupt. And that is Caesar's kingdom. It doesn't mean that every man in the government is corrupt. Hold me, please hear me out. Not every person in the government is corrupt. There are very, very honorable men in the government. I'm talking about the kingdom. The kingdom is corrupt. But we live here. And Jesus says these things. Now, you see, every generation has always asked it in new forms, I think probably, how shall the Christian relate to politics? The question really is much, much deeper than that. That's only a surface question, how should Christians relate to politics? The question that we need to answer is, to whom do I belong? To whom do I belong? Jesus did not deny living in Caesar's world or his existence, nor did he even borrow Caesar's methods. He didn't. This kingdom is established by and upheld by ballots and bullets and benches. This kingdom is held up by truth and suffering love and obedience. And so Jesus recognized that this would be so. And so when you hear preachers talking about separation of church or state or two kingdoms, this is what they are speaking about. Not because the state is evil in and of itself, but because the church is holy. And the church, or the kingdom where we have our citizenship in Jesus Christ, should not be confused with this one. Because if it gets confused and we fall over in here and we're confused, one thing is we commit spiritual adultery, but worse than that, the witness and the love and the purpose and the everlasting kingdom of Jesus Christ is compromised. So we have a couple points here. There are two kingdoms and two authorities. Jesus' kingdom and Caesar's kingdom, and there are two authorities. Jesus' authority and Caesar's authority. We read those there in the verses. And Jesus clearly distinguishes between these two realms when he said, my kingdom is not of this world. render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. You recognize two kingdoms and two authorities. That's my first point. It's a very easy point, but we have to keep in mind, and we want to keep in mind. And again, if they were hunting me as a partridge to take off my neck, it would be much more clear. I mean, why would I fly the flag of Caesar if he was after my neck? Why would I do that? And your forefathers, and the emphasis was that God has ordained civil governments to restrain evil in a fallen world, and establish the church as a holy people governed by Jesus Christ in the body of Jesus Christ. These are not competitors, but they operate under two different means. Caesar rules by law and force and coercion. Christ rules by truth and love and voluntary obedience. Those are worlds apart. The danger comes when Christians attempt to use Caesar's tools to accomplish Jesus' ends, or when we try to be parts of both worlds. We cannot. So the first point I'm making is that there are two kingdoms and two authorities. The Bible recognizes that. Number two, the Bible recognizes and teaches us submission without confusion, meaning what is Caesar's? We read this here in Romans in 13 and 1 Peter. The scripture calls believers to respect governing authorities, to pay your taxes. Did you hear taxes in that list I gave? And we have agreed, you'll find this in our standards to keep, that we agree that we pay our taxes and they use it however they do it. Respect for governing authorities, paying your taxes, whatever, those are the easy ones. Obeying any laws that do not violate the commands of God, and to live peaceably and quietly in this world, but at the same time to follow Jesus Christ. That's an important distinction. See, submission to Caesar is not the same as participation with Caesar. Remember that. Submission to this authority acknowledges that he does have authority. Participation would be exercising in his authority. We don't do that because we believe that Jesus taught different. And so Anabaptists, like they call us, historically and biblically, have always agreed and affirmed submission to the government while refusing the offices that require coercion or violence or judgment. And as a young man, well, we'll get to that in a little. So my second point is that we submit, but that is not the same as participation in his things. The third point I'm making is where politics touches the Christian conscience. That's things which should not be coercive or forceful. Paying the taxes, obeying the laws, respecting the officials. And if you violate the law and the law stops you, you should thank the God for stopping you. You should say thank you for that. He is there to help us, to keep us safe. Or appearing in court when we are required. Sometimes we are required to come to court and to say, what did you see? That's all we do. We don't pass any judgment on it. Sometimes in a traffic violation or something like that, and maybe something happens in your neighborhood, we get called to court because the judge has to make a decision. We should go there. What did you see? This is what I saw. No, we don't make any judgments on it. This is just what I saw. This will happen sometimes in different places where we get called in. But where it does not violate our conscience or the teachings of Jesus, as it has to do with force or militant things, we obey. But we refuse legislating laws or judging guilt and punishment or prosecuting criminals or law enforcement roles involving force or military service or any kind of thing that would be in that. I probably told the story here, but I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I was called to jury duty, and it was really good for me because I was sort of wondering how this would be. I wrote a letter and told them I could not serve in the jury. They sent me a letter back and said, but you shall appear at the jury summons. So I appeared at the court. There were some men there that I knew, businessmen I've known over the years. There were probably 200 people there in the room. I don't know. The court judge was deciding who would be on this jury because this jury says guilty or not guilty. He was going down over a long list of things, and I didn't know when I was going to stand up, but I needed to stand up and say I can't be on this. I had to testify that. Somewhere along the line, I thought, well, this one would fit, so I stood up. And I said, Mr. Judge, I can't serve on this jury. He said, why not? I said, because I believe the Bible teaches me that that is your work. That Romans chapter 13 teaches me that is your work to do, but it's not my work to do. You mean, sir, that you couldn't even tell me if a man had violated the law or not violated it? Yes, I said, I could tell you that, but I would say free anyway. I would say mercy anyway. Really, I'd say mercy anyway. Well, what would be the third reason? I said, because I'm a preacher. I teach these things in my pulpit. I teach the young people. I need to be an example. He said, sit down. I wouldn't be a good juror, see. But here's the thing that grabbed me. I suddenly realized that I was in a whole group about bigger than this. And I suddenly realized that besides one other Christian lady that was there that I knew did not want to, I was among a whole group of people who wanted to be chosen, and here I didn't want to be chosen. And suddenly, I was the oddball. Suddenly, I was the oddball. I wasn't with my business friends anymore. Because they wanted to be chosen, I didn't want to be chosen. That was pretty good for me. See, because this. I hope you get called in. And I hope that the state of Virginia doesn't let you write a letter. But you're going to have to decide then before the judge which you are. And you're going to have to say it with your mouth, and it's going to have to make you stand out. Whether you have a suit on or you don't. You know that big book that you haven't read, but sometime you should read at least one story in it. It's called Martyr's Mirror. See? You have it in your house, but you haven't read it. Never did read it. But you should at least read one story in it. Because this thing here is going on here. Is this a salvation issue? Whether I can take up force? Someone tell me if it's a salvation issue or not. Why? Because the preachers taught you that. That one reason. Why else? Pardon? I'm not getting it. Oh, no murderer has eternal life. Does your Bible say that? Does it make any difference whether it's peacetime or not peacetime? See, I know we read this news, and there's something in us that says go sick 'em. That belongs to that. Belongs over there. Because We say like Jesus, mercy, mercy, mercy. So we don't, how can I vote for a man who is the head of the military who says, sick him? How can I vote for a man who's going to go down there and catch him and bring him back? How can I vote for the man who's going to take life? I remember Brother Sanders from Alturas years ago had meetings at Calvary Mennonite Church, and he had been a California State Police officer. But he came to this understanding that he could not do this. And there probably is a place where a man coming to the truth and wrestling with that truth, and it's what kind of caused a little issue, because he was explaining one night about how he come, he started to read the Bible and how this was starting to come to him about how he could not do this, and he was explaining this, and somebody in the congregation misunderstood him, I think, because they reprimanded him afterwards. He said, well, you couldn't have been a Christian. You had to carry a gun, you had to shoot someone. He said, yeah, one time I did. Because that was his work. But see, he was coming to the truth of this matter. And then he said, but how about this? There was church strife. We were sitting around a table one night. And he said, I looked at the brothers. And he said, you taught me that these things shall not be in the Church of Jesus Christ. You taught me that I should not fight. Here you are fighting. Well, now what are we going to do about that one? See? These are the places where it gets close to us. Put up thy sword. Jesus said, my servants do not fight. I cannot take the sword. I cannot vote for a man who takes the sword. So we have military service, we have police force, we have armed securities, we have capital punishment, we have personal vengeance. And Jesus, the Bible says, Jesus didn't say in the Bible, vengeance belongs to me, I will repay. So that is the reason that we have asked our members not to do these things. And it gets into the political expressions, and while voting seems to be somewhat to the side, these all feed into the same truth that we are of a different kingdom. Because indirectly, that's what's happening, and it entangles us and divides our loyalties. These are why we believe we must abstain from voting and party allegiance and refrain from political campaigning and so forth. Not out of indifference. I think that Paul cared very much who was the Caesar and what was happening in the little world. I don't think it's wrong to know about that. I think we should, but we need to stay uninvolved and pray and respect out of our higher allegiance for Jesus Christ. And so when men and God collide, we obey Jesus' law. We have a better citizenship. I just have a couple points, because these things are not always as clear. I read you that list. But some of the things, sometimes they get a little cloudy. Now, last Saturday evening, my wife and I drove during the day, and about 6:30 in the evening, we arrived at Rodney Martin's. I was asked to preach at the Way of Truth Church. And so we went up there. And so our GPS, like it does, Rodney Martin is a son, he's a deacon there, nice, quiet young man, not loud and boisterous. But the GPS took us in this drive, and as soon as I got to the house, I said, this is not the right house. Why? Because there was an American flag. How did I know that I was at the wrong place? And yet sometimes our young men get this all confused. The reason I knew was because I knew that Brother Rodney's allegiance was here and that he wouldn't display it here. I like Ford trucks, but you shouldn't buy that model. You shouldn't buy the patriotic model. You shouldn't be driving that. You shouldn't put that cap. You shouldn't wear that cap with a flag on it. You shouldn't do that. Why? speak? If you belong to Jesus. Now, if you belong over here, it's okay. But not if you belong to Jesus. This is why I told the young man in one of the churches which I've ever said, if you're going to be a member of this church and you want to fly a flag on his, one of those rods they put up in the back of the truck, you know, it looks, it's for young men, it's just kind of, you know, macho, right? Why do you think that in the world that's going on, why do you think the burning of flags is such a big deal if it's nothing? Why, someone tell me, why is a burning of a flag a big deal? Yes. It's just a great big statement about who we are and who we aren't. It's a big deal. And you ought to think about this. And that's why when you have an advertisement over the 4th of July, you shouldn't have a flag on it. You say it's a small, it's not a small issue, it's a big issue. Now, we should obey and respect it. We ran into this over at Keysville because, and I think I was a little weak. I probably was weak. Keysville Church was built on the property of Francis Scott Key. He wrote the song. See? It's a big deal in that little community. So we went in there, and of course, the brethren asked me what I thought about it, and I said, well, I took the low road. I said, well, I mean, it's not the very first thing you have to do. They didn't agree with me. They thought that it was the very first thing that they had to do. They thought that they could not have church there without taking that flag down. And so they did. I did criticize Curtis a little wee bit because he went out after dark and took it down. I said, you didn't have to be Gideon at least. But anyway, I'm just talking about this, see? They were right and I was wrong. They said, we can't have church here with that flag out there. Now, what he did do, he went on the internet and he found out how to fold it because there is a special way that a flag is to be folded. We don't know very much about this because we don't belong in the mirror, but it's a special way. He folded it like that. He called the neighbor who was upset about it and told him that he folded it. It's in the basement there and we will give it to him at any time he wants to. That was good and right. I don't think the man ever got it. I think it's there. Was it wrong for him to fold it respectfully? No. That was the right thing to do. But these are big issues, and this is why we believe what we do, to stay uninvolved with materialistic, militistic events. And this is why, I don't know if you're going to handle this one, but this is why I taught my children that we don't go down to the park on the 4th of July to watch fireworks. That's why I taught my children we don't do that. Now, I live and our neighbors, they shoot fireworks, and I don't think it's a sin for me to be in my yard and see that someone is having fireworks. But I think that it is wrong for one who has the allegiance of Jesus Christ to go buy fireworks and shoot them off. Why would I be wrong about that teaching? If my teaching is correct this morning, if my teaching is incorrect, then I'm wrong. But if my teaching is correct this morning, then why would this man celebrate July 4th? Uncle Chester Martin, runs that big Martin's elevator, you don't know about him, but he died. He was my uncle. He started that thing, my wife's uncle. They worked on July 4th. They never closed their doors. He said, we don't do that. See, the list of, these things face us. And if I were a partridge hunted for my face by Caesar, would I have a fireworks party? I know these are difficult, but I love us. Well, let me tell you something else. This is for the minister here, maybe. But I remember, see, we have a CAS program. Do you know what that is? Christian Anabaptist Service Program. What that is for you to participate in civilian things, to honor Caesar, but to more so honor the grace of Jesus Christ. That means you go and you serve some time for the country, but you do it in the name of Jesus Christ, and it has nothing to do with military. My bishop, when I was 18, I was 18 one time, and I faced the same temptations that you do. This bishop is gone now, but the 1W program had ended, and draft had ended, and there was no draft, which is still now at this time. And he required that all the boys that were 18 years old would write him a paper and say why they believed they could not serve in the armed forces. Victor, you think that might be helpful to our boys today? You think you should write one too? I wonder where all those papers are. I don't know if the preachers there have them or what, but I'm just kind of saying something here, but it was helpful for me just to write a paragraph. That way he had a record. See, so think about that. Now, yesterday, and so these questions sometimes get all tangled up in the world in which we live, but I think my point for what I'm saying and the point I'm making is we should be thinking seriously about it. We should be thinking in the manner that they are after us. Maybe that would help us. Yesterday I read with a man, I didn't know this, but in Path Valley, Dry Run, there's a company that is the second largest broom manufacturer in the world, next to all of them that come from Indonesia and China, the gentleman told me. And he's not a Christian man, but the man who worked there was an Amish man. But he was just telling me about this, and I found it interesting because he said we make all kinds of brooms. Any kind of brush, any kind of broom that you can think of, we make it. And then he began to tell me about a huge part of their business, and that is they do stainless steel brushes or brooms for the military for submarines. Now what? Should I? He's not here, but should Sherwin go down and take up a big contract to put in doors at a military installation? What do you think? Let's do it this way. You assigned me this subject, which you didn't. I decided to preach it. But I drive truck, and so I'm also a frugal Mennonite. So what I'm going to do is, I think it's a pretty long way down there, so what I'll do is I'll pick up my load at Letterkenny. I have a low boy, and I'll pick up 3 pieces of military equipment, and then I'm coming down here the next day, and I'm going to have all-day meetings on this subject. And so I'll just park the truck over here somewhere. This doesn't work. We are ambassadors. We do not take life. We give vengeance to God. He will, in another dispensation, come and execute wrath upon sinners. But for now, it's grace, grace, grace. And every Christian and unbeliever who wakes up in the morning is living in grace. Living in grace. And he says that this is what we do. We love our enemies. We serve without coercion. And we suffer without retaliation. And that's what we do. We live not withdrawn from this world, but faithful to Christ in its presence. Strangers and pilgrims, ambassadors, not legislators, witnesses, not rulers. Hebrews 13 says, we have no contending city here. We're just here waiting and living and teaching and being like Jesus. Because Christians do not save nations, Christ saved people. And so the questions, there's probably many questions that we have, but I think the point of that is, and I think there are some areas when you start talking about second or third party, I would not, if I had a business and I was selling brooms and a military man came to buy brooms, I would sell him a broom the same as I sell one to the sisters here. But that would be different in my view of the scriptures, or what I think I'm trying to teach this morning. I think that would be different than taking on a military contract to build brooms for the military. And there are so many of these kind of things, I think, given the list of things that I gave, that we need the brotherhood to make some decisions on it, you know? This is not military and doesn't fit there, but I'll use it as an example. Brother Gerald, I've had some crazy things in my life, thoughts, and I know for a little while, I thought, well, I would like to be a FedEx delivery driver. Until one day, I was going up there to Schittenberg, and here I saw the FedEx delivery truck at the Lion's Den. I knew that was out. I won't be a FedEx, so I have to give up that dream. At the same time, Brother Gerald goes from Greencastle to Bristol every day. I think maybe over 2 million miles now. I like to kid him when I go to church and he, hey Gerald, was you down the road today? Yeah. Same road. Yeah, same road. And he drives for FedEx. Here's the point. I suppose that he is hauling some Lion's Den magazines. I suppose he is. But isn't that different than the end? Isn't that different? See, my point I'm making, now that's about that. That's not about military. But there are these many, many, many places where we face these questions. And I am so glad to be part of a church who together we talk about these things and we say, no, that doesn't fit. Let's don't do that. See that young man that wanted to fly that on the back of his truck, he had a black pair of jeans that he wanted to wear for church all the time right here. It said, we the people. I told him, if you're going to be a community member of this church, you can't wear those pants. Was that wrong? Well, I'll let you answer that, but I didn't think it was. I told him, no, you can't do that. Why did I tell him that? Because this is what we believe. So we need judgment. But I think the bigger question is, what is our testimony? And we face these discussions. And I'll say one thing yet, and I say this cautiously, but with a good bit of heart. I'm anxious in all of our listening, and I know that I'm a different generation of young people, and I might be wrong and you might be right, but Psalms 1 says that a man of God that's rooted in the truth, it doesn't say that he'll be listening and listening and listening and listening. It says he will be reading the word and thinking about it, musing on it. And I am anxious for all of the podcast listening that's happening among us, whether it's music all the way to whatever it is. Here's the reason. Most of those speakers do not believe what I taught this morning. And here's the thing. I'm not saying that you can't get some use from it. I'm not saying there's no truth in it. There is truth in it. I'm not saying that we shouldn't read any books from those authors. I'm not saying we shouldn't listen to any of them, but I might be. It depends. The point is, they don't believe what I taught. They don't believe that. It's not what they say It's what they don't say. Be careful. The preacher said at our meetings on Friday differently than I'm going to say it, because he didn't say it straight enough for us to understand it was my thought. But I asked him if that's what he said, and he says what I said. The same thing that happened to Christians of the past who listened to the public radio and public television, he said the same thing will happen to us if we do so. The same influence that happened there will happen again. So think about that, because my point is, most, now if I am wrong and your Anabaptist forefathers are wrong, then I guess what I said this morning, this point's not true. But most of those speakers would not agree with my teaching this morning. Be very, very, very careful as you go. And may God bless you. I know that you are in a generation. You must live in a generation that God puts you, and we must all do that. But this is what we believe, that it's Him and us, and we are His, and we submit to Mr. Caesar. May God bless. Let's kneel in prayer.